Hey, this is Matt Lesher. I play Eobard Thawne on CW's The Flash, and this is the Central City Underground.
Run, Barry. Run.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Central City Underground. I'm one of your hosts, Tony Caselli.
And I'm the other one of your hosts, Tony Caselli. Wait.
You should be so lucky.
You're not wrong. It's the dream of many of us. But no, I am in fact Joseph Zettelmeyer.
Yes, he is Joseph Zettelmeyer. And together we form the hosting team of Central City Underground. Here we like to talk about that outstanding superhero show on the CW, The Flash. This week we are talking, this is Central City Underground, episode 79, and we are talking about season 3, episode 10 of The Flash, entitled
Borrowing Problems from the Future.
I like that title.
I do too. Very clever.
Yes. It
made a lot of sense based on what was going on in the episode.
Right? And it's funny because things are a little relaxed in our world right now. I mean, he had to deal with Plunder, but hey, let's be honest.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. Plunder's kind of like a C-level villain, you know.
You're not wrong. I mean, his gun is awesome, but
right? Yeah.
Are we really losing sleep over Plunder?
No.
The answer is no.
And it's interesting, too, because, it's true, I guess. If you're, protecting an entire city, sometimes you're fighting giant evil gorillas who could take you down. And sometimes you're fighting, like, the Jaywalker with an attitude,
Is that where Plunder's criminal history started?
Right, probably.
That first time he jaywalked and didn't get caught? It's like, right? My God, I can do anything!
That went really well. I want to build a gun that does anything.
There is no law.
He made a giant leap. I can cross the street when the light is red. My gun will have tracking bullets and lasers.
And an electronet that apparently does nothing.
Yeah, that was one of the big questions I have later in my notes was, where does this come from? Like, I hope there's more to that. Anyway, let's start at the very beginning, Joe.
A very good place to start.
Welcome back from hiatus.
Yeah, right? It's nice to be back after all this time. I hope you guys all had a lot of fun while we were gone.
Well, the Central City Underground Facebook page was really active, and that was very cool to see.
Right? So, the memes, the endless memes.
Thank you, everyone, for jumping on there. And if you're listening and are not yet a part of the social media section of Central City Underground, join us on Facebook at Central City Underground or follow us at The Flash GSM on Twitter.
I'm not going to lie. I can't get enough of the Barry stop screwing with the future memes. They make me laugh every time.
They're pretty funny. Agreed. So, Joe, we've come back and season 3, episode 10 picks up a month later.
Right.
This episode had a drop-off in ratings.
Aww.
It was at 2.68, which is pretty low, but I went back and checked, and all of the other seasons, all of them, both of the other seasons, there were two of them, the first and second seasons both had a drop-off coming back from hiatus that was pretty big. So I guess it's not that much of a surprise. People are like,
right.
Oh, wait, the show's back. Let's play catch-up,
Right. Let's not worry.
No. This episode was written by Grain Godfrey and David Cobb, and they both have a good number of Flash credits. Grain Godfrey wrote on Things You Can't Outrun, Power Outage, Rogue Time, All-Star Team-Up, Grodd Lives, and more.
Ooh.
I know, some good stuff. And David Cobb wrote Escape from Earth 2, versus Zoom, Invincible, Magenta, Shade. So this was a pretty experienced With the Flash team.
I could see the presence of their steady hand.
Well, speaking of that, though, actually, the episode was directed by Millicent Shelton, who has only directed two other Flash episodes, right?
Which ones?
The Flash is Born, Season 1, Episode 6. So, when he first sort of becomes the Flash, right?
Right.
And then Welcome to Earth 2 in season 2.
And, oh, interesting that we have the writer from Welcome to Earth 1 and or the director of Welcome to Earth 1 and the writer of Escape from Earth 1 or Earth 2.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, David Cobb wrote Escape from Earth 2 and she wrote or she directed Welcome to Earth 2. So there's some fun connections.
Fascinating.
But, you know, the other thing, the reason I brought up Millicent Shelton is because she also she's got 3 Flash credits but has about 60 other TV directing credits. And is no stranger to, you know, leading a team. And I really liked the direction of this episode.
Oh, yeah. No, it was very pleasing to watch.
Well, it was clean storytelling, you know. The action was good. The dramatic moments were good. Intentions were clear. There were no, like, what? Why is that happening moments? Except maybe a couple that were supposed to be there, you know.
Yeah.
Like the end, this woman shows up. But it very so nicely set up what was coming. I just thought it was a really well-directed episode. Halfway through, I started noticing things and really appreciating her work, so. Just wanted to throw that out there.
It's funny. I didn't realize it till you said it. But part of the reason I did like this episode so much is, unlike some of the other ones that shall remain nameless, I didn't walk out of this episode going, what the bleep just happened?
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, there are times, as a director, you know, on stage, there are times where you want the audience asking that, right? Because you want to lead them forward and drag them along. This episode didn't have any of those moments, and so what you want is good, clean storytelling that pulls people in, right? And at no point sort of knocks you out of the episode going, wait a minute.
Well, you know? And one of my big things is it was a bunch of the characters behaving like we would expect them to behave.
Yeah.
One of the things that sometimes drives me nuts is when the characters start behaving completely out of character for the sake of the plot. And there was none of that this episode.
No, I really liked it. So yeah. Let's talk about ratings, Joe. What did you rate this episode?
I gave this episode 8.3 out of 10 housewarming reptiles.
That is hilarious. Because I gave it 8.25, 8.25 McSquirtle the Turtles.
We both liked that turtle,
yes.
And I hope we see more of him.
And that was it, McSquirtle McNurdle? I can't.
I think
remember.
It was Squirtle McTurtle, but I could be wrong.
I can't remember now. That's funny. I wrote down McSquirtle, but for some reason that sounds like a Pokemon character to me.
You kids and your Pokemons.
We'll have to ask people. All right, so. Are there news items we should address this week, Joe?
There is some news that we got over the break that I wanted to make sure we're all caught up on because I think it's going to start affecting the season pretty soon.
Uh-oh.
We have a bunch of people returning this season, the second half of the season. We have a lot of familiar faces coming back.
Yeah, who are they?
Well, we have 3 characters and 2 familiar faces. The 2 familiar faces, we are seeing the return of Robbie, aka the original Firestorm, and shocker of all shockers, the return of Eddie Thawne.
Yes, absolutely.
No clue how we're going to pull that one off, but I'm very curious to see.
Yeah, it will be fun to see. Robbie Amell, Ronnie Raymond.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, Robbie Amell, Ronnie Raymond.
He's coming back. We still don't know how, but he's coming back.
Right. And joining the trio of corpses returning to life for some reason, we have the Black Flash is coming back.
Yes. At some point, we will see all 3 of them over the next, what do we have, 12 episodes left, right?
Although now as I say it, I wonder if the Black Flash may have something to do with these characters coming back from the dead.
Oh, maybe. Well, when they announced that Eddie Thawne was coming back, a lot of people went, Eddie Thawne is Savitar.
Right?
Could, you know, who knows? All we know is he got sucked into the Speed Force at the end of season 1.
That is true.
Maybe he turned into evil Speedster after that.
I mean, there's no evidence of Savitar getting sucked into the Speed Force. Oh, wait!
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. Other smaller news things, we do know the next couple of episodes, episodes 11 and 12, the titles of those, episode 11 is Dead or Alive, and episode 12 is Untouchable.
Right.
And then rumor has it that episodes 13 and 14 are our two-parter Gorilla Grodd episodes. Yes.
It can't come soon enough.
No, it really can't. And according to the producer, one of those episodes will be set in Gorilla City. And one of them will be back here on Earth One. So there's, and you know, we sort of knew one of them was going to be here on Earth One because of one of the headlines from this episode.
Right.
When we went into the future. But there's some pretty sweet stuff coming down the pike for this show, I think.
Well, and speaking of Gorilla City, we have some additional awesome casting news. The casting of Keith David as Solovar.
Yes.
Which is so exciting. Anyone who, well, Keith David's got an incredible and amazing storied career. As a voice actor, many of you might remember him as the voice of Goliath from Gargoyles.
Right. And, yeah, Solovar is a great character from the comics who is another super smart gorilla.
He is. But with a heart of gold.
Yes, he's a good guy. And I can't wait to see how that works in this show.
Me neither.
So, anyway, I think that's all the news stuff. There's probably more. You guys can let us know if we've forgotten anything that you want to talk about when you send in comments. But, Joe, should we start at the beginning of the episode?
Let's do it.
Take us away.
We begin with a dream within a dream within a dream. Barry's having a little PTSD, dreamy, flashbacky goodness.
It's really just one dream, though. But okay.
It is. I just wanted to be poetical. in which, yes, he is reliving a certain event that we saw just last, in the very last episode, in which Savitar skewers Iris on his weird arm blade thingy.
Yes.
And Barry is helpless to do anything. It's a nice reminder for the audience, you know, in case they forgot that pivotal moment.
Right.
You know, something. And again, I mean, it's easy to remind us as well because they changed the opening of the show again.
Yeah, they did. And I liked the new voiceover.
I did too. I like that they keep updating the opener every time just to, you know, keep us abreast of what's going on.
Well, and that would happen in the comics too. Like his opening comic thread would change, which I thought was cool.
Right. It just makes sense. And so, yes, Barry wakes up in what is soon to be revealed his utterly ridiculous Friends style. How on earth did they afford this apartment? How rich is Barry? I can't figure that out.
Yeah, well, you know, if Harrison Wells left him Star Labs, he's got to have some money coming in from that, right? Plus,
but
he's been
is Star Labs doing anything?
Well, I don't know. We talked about this way early on. I think they have to have, in order to stay open, they have to be doing some things. Because just that building takes a lot of power. Like, so they have to have, like, patents. Things out there, yeah. And stuff happening. But I do like that, you know, HR is now going, that's not big enough for what we want to do. Let's open a museum. We need a revenue stream, you know.
Right. Makes sense.
So I get that. I think it's cool. Because, you know, these guys have to be getting paid. This is their job. You know, so there's money coming in. Also, you know, we talked about it before. Barry's been working as a CSI and living with Joe for his whole life. So he's got to have some saved up. Right? So between him and Iris, they've got money for a nice pad. It's pretty sweet, though.
I am just going to say, though, Barry's food bill is going to be pretty substantial.
Right.
I'm just saying. Anyway, so Barry wakes up next to Iris, and we can see that they're all adorable and in love. It's super cute. I love them. They're just the best. But Barry does what Barry frequently does, where Iris is trying to get him to open up about what his nightmares are, and he brushes it off. It's nothing. He's had a hard life. Don't worry about it.
Right.
He's having nightmares. And before she can push him any further on this, they both get their little text messagey warning thingies. Bing, bing, bing. That's the sound it makes. Bing, bing, bing.
And sure enough, there's a fire.
Right. There's a fire that reintroduces us to Greg Grunberg, who's still on the show, who I admit, until he showed up, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he's on the show now.
I did, too. I absolutely did. And I like that, you know, she says, Wally's going to beat you there. You know, he's there to help. You know, so I like that we start out the beginning, the last month, Wally has been shadowing Barry. He's been training. That part is cool. And I really like the scene at the fire where Barry lays a little knowledge on him, you know?
Right? Let's science this thing up.
Right. Look at the soot around the door. That means blah, blah, blah. We have to blah, blah, blah. Don't just barge in. Right? It's nice seeing that stuff that he learned from, you know, what's his name? Arrow. The whole idea of you're at Speedster. You have time to case the room. Right.
Right.
Don't just barge in. Right.
Well, and I love that, like, with the exception of one obvious little hiccup in the middle of the episode, Barry and Wally work really well together. Right? Like, Wally is listening to Barry, and Barry seems to be good at passing down the knowledge. They work well, and it's right out of the comics, and it makes my heart happy.
Right.
So, yes, they rescue him after using oxygen, sucking oxygen out of the room to stop the fire. I don't know science.
I was waiting for you to try and finish that.
I don't know how science. I mean, there was a part of me that's like, doesn't Greg Rudberg need oxygen to breathe? But it doesn't matter.
Greg. it wasn't Greg Rudberg inside there, was it? He was outside.
I thought he was inside.
No, he was. I think he was outside. He's a policeman. I think there was a fireman. I don't know. I got a little lost. But what I did know, maybe it was him. But then, when we get back to the police station, why is he being a jerk about Kid Flash?
Because it's not a superhero show unless there's someone in the civilian side going, I don't know. I don't trust. Fill in the blank.
Right. I was like, they just saved you. Shut up.
Right. It's called the J. Jonah Jameson syndrome.
Exactly.
There's always got to be somebody who's, I don't know.
But we got one of our little Easter eggs this episode where he said, why don't we already have a Flash. Why don't we ship this one off to Keystone City?
That made me so happy because in the comic books, that is in fact where Wally is based.
Yes. Barry Allen was the Central City Flash and Wally West was the Keystone City Flash. And they're sort of right in the comics, they're like across a bay from each other.
Right. There's an awesome bridge between the two cities.
Yeah. So it was fun to have that referenced. But I did like watching Wally go, oh.
Poor Wally. And he's doing a good job. I love that they're acknowledging that. I love that they're acknowledging that Wally is already almost as fast as Barry is.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, but eventually in the comics, Wally becomes faster.
Yes.
But it's great watching that guiding hand thing happening. I liked that a lot.
And speaking of hands, we go back to Central City to Star Labs as well, where we get to reconnect with the gang. And what oh what is Caitlin still wearing?
Her bracelets of depowerment.
That's right. Is that a Dungeons and Dragons thing?
Inventing words if you need them.
Right. And they seem to be a little hit and miss. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's still interesting. And watching it, I really like the development of what's happening. It is still a little interesting, the thing we talked about before, of how come getting these powers instantly turns her evil. Like, that question still is in my mind of how come? Like, Barry got powers, he didn't turn evil. There are people who get powers who don't turn evil. And she's not a bad person. You know,
isn't she, Tony?
Maybe she is deep down, and but it's a weird thing. Putting that aside, because we have to, because hand wavy, it's happening, right?
Right. Just make peace with this.
Right. Exactly. I did like the fact that her little bracelets are flashing, and Cisco's like, "You got to charge them," and it's more than that. That little moment where she went to talk to Julian, and the battery faded. It was fast.
Yeah.
Like, that was instant. Oh, geez, the thing's blinking. Oh, no. Glowy eyes. Oh, God. You know, she got her little mini charger out and gave herself her fix.
Well, and one of the things that I think is, just as a little tangent for a second, just a second, one of the things that I think is very interesting going on in the DC comics is Killer Frost has her own little series kind of thing going on right now. And do you see what they're doing with her, Tony?
Well, I know that right now she's a member of the Justice League.
She's joining the Justice League.
Yes.
Which makes me wonder if they're going to superhero up Killer Frost in the DC Universe side of things to kind of line it up with what's going on with her on the TV show.
I wouldn't hate that. I think that would be fun if, you know, these bracelets and whatnot, her own willpower, etc., eventually turns it into her being in control of her powers and in control of her actions and not going evil every time she powers up. You know, I think that would be great.
I think it would be a lot of fun. I watch my superhero shows because I want to see freaking superheroes with superpowers. And I would love to see Caitlin fall into that particular category.
Yeah, that would be fun.
But meanwhile, back at Star Labs, we get the return of one of my all-time favorite phrases, and I just hope we keep using it. Sumptuous day!
Yes.
And now, I love that HR is riding around on, what are those things called?
Segway.
He's riding around on a Segway. Just something so goofy about that, and I love it.
We can hit the whole HR subplot, because I liked him in this episode. I think we were meant to, because clearly the end of the episode is lining up something bad with him, right?
Right.
Excuse me. But I did like that he's got this plan, and he's trying to be useful, and he's moving forward with it. You know, he's looked at the team, he's looked at what's going on, and how can I help? I can get us a revenue stream, I can reopen this place. And the museum itself actually looked pretty cool.
Oh, it did. I remain uncertain as to what Olga's job is.
I don't know, especially since she doesn't really speak English.
Yeah, not 100% positive what's going on there.
I hope we see more of her.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, not sure what purpose she serves.
I don't know, but I really did like his whole attempt to make the museum work. I liked the not quite right Cisco hologram.
Science.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
There was a lot of great stuff going on, and I still wrestle a little bit with HR. I mean, he is certainly growing on me. He certainly is.
Yeah.
There is a part of me where it's like, or we could just stick to one Wells. That would be fine too, right?
Yeah.
I worry sometimes that we're going to start getting copies of a copy where, like, each version is less interesting and clear than the version before it.
And I totally get it. You know, he in theory is on Earth 2 with Jesse Quick fighting crime the way our Star Labs is.
Right.
So what do you do with him? And I totally get that. But I do kind of miss Harrison Wells.
I do, too. Yeah. Bring back Harry.
Yeah.
Although I have a suspicion we're going to be seeing Harry very soon.
Well, I know we're going to Earth 2 where Gorilla Grodd is. So in theory, we would see him then for sure.
Yes. Well, and I have another suspicion as well. But we'll talk about that when we get there.
Okay. All right. So what else happens next?
So we've got the return of the Star Labs Museum. We've got Cisco having absolutely none of HR's
shenanigans.
There's the word I was looking for. There was another word I was going to use, but involved profanity. So yes. I was trying to think a way around it. Nice. Shenanigans.
Yeah.
There it is. We also learned that HR has a horrible, horrible out of control caffeine problem.
Yeah, he really does. And there's a theory there that I've been working on. I don't know what it is, and it's probably ridiculous, but it connects with, you know, we've been talking about HR. Let's just talk about HR for a minute. We've been talking about HR for a while, about who is he, this guy? You know, okay, he's a writer. Is that the whole story? Well, at the end of this episode, we get a woman who we are going to find out that's Gypsy, right, from his Earth. And she's got a little, you know, hand hologram thingy, the way everyone uses.
Where's mine? I want one of those.
Right? Of his face. I don't know why you're traveling to a different universe if you've forgotten what the guy looks like. But let's just show each other what that is as soon as we get there, right? And that was one of the sort of funny, like, okay, we have to show the audience why she's here. But as far as a move a real human would make, maybe. But anyway, she's here, in theory, right, hunting him down. And then when you watch the previews for next episode, you find out more of that, right?
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to talk too much about that, but it was clear that that's what was happening. So all of this stuff about HR, in fact, on Facebook over the break, Jenny Ash shared her theory that HR is actually Randolph Morgan. the guy who, remember when HR used his
transmogrifier?
And then that sort of went nowhere. We were like, where'd that go? That's been, was dropped as a little thing that existed. I could change my face to look like anything. And then it went away. So the question is, did he actually just forget that he hadn't transmogrified his face when he walked into the room with everybody? And is Randolph Morgan his real face? So I don't know.
This is going to be an interesting slash occasionally difficult thread.
Right. And so the thing was, is there something about the face transmogrification and like he needs coffee? He needs caffeine. He's got to be, I don't know. Does it help him survive the constant transmogrification? You know, or is that just ridiculous? I don't know.
See, I was a big fan of the theory that Cisco posited of, are you sure Randolph Morgan didn't solve that problem just to get you out of there?
That could be too.
I was like, oh, and even HR admitted that that was actually possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, nobody wants HR
around.
There's
more to come. I think the story's not done. We know he's a writer, but I think he's not evil. I think that's the thing. And that's a nice change with this version of, you know, fake Harrison Wells. Is he not evil? So it'll be fun to find out.
The fact that he's a writer leads us on to one of our next plot points, which is Barry sitting down with HR and picking his brain regarding how time travel works into the future. And I like that it was interesting, right? I love that he introduced it as, you know, the fans have two theories.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Which, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is the writers. This is Grant Godfrey and David Cobb talking directly to us.
Oh, like, it was great. What was the name of his book, The Future Ain't What It Used to Be?
Is that what it was?
I don't remember. It was something like that. It was awesome. Great title.
Yeah. While he was explaining it, I really had the idea that they were looking directly through the camera, like right at you and me and the Central City Undergrounders. You guys. Yeah, there's a couple theories. We don't know. We're just going to go with it. Like, cut it out.
Right. And it's the two theories we're all familiar with, right? Meaning that if you adjust something, that the future's not set, right? It's mutable. Anything can change.
Right.
The idea, and it seems like Jay Garrick kind of backs that version up, right? The idea that it's one possible future, that it's always changeable. Yes. Yoda also backs that up.
Okay.
Also, always in motion, the future is.
What episode did he appear in? I don't.
You'll see. It's next episode. You'll see.
Oh, great. Okay.
And then you've got the idea that the future is set, and that it's the idea of predestination, right? The idea that anything you do, even if you're attempting to change the future, is actually what you were supposed to do all along.
Right. That's putting you on the path toward fulfilling the future that you're trying to avoid.
Right.
And that's what HR seems to believe in.
Yeah, he's got that great line. I think a man often meets his destiny on the very road he takes to avoid it.
Yes.
It's a great line.
And it's nice, you know, Barry going to HR, going, I need somebody to talk to who I can talk to about this.
Right.
And you know, the relationships with HR were interesting this episode because Barry was going back to him looking for that Harrison Wells guidance that he used to be able to get, right?
Right.
But also the relationship with HR and Cisco this episode was reversed a little bit because last season we saw Harrison Wells giving Cisco grief about everything.
Yes.
And Cisco was kind of doing that back to HR this episode.
Yep.
I said Harrison Wells, I meant Harry, right?
At this point, it's weird, but I think we can all actually follow which one we're talking about based on the season.
Good. Okay.
So, Barry walks away from that still uncertain, but hopeful that he can change the future. Meanwhile, at the Fortress of Solitude.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice. Meanwhile, at Central City Police Department, Caitlin has decided to pay a visit to everyone's favorite snarky Brit, Julian.
Yes. I like this little twist.
I do too. And I admit, I think like a lot of us, we're looking at it going, is something going to happen between Julian and Caitlin?
Yeah, I hope not. And
I do too.
It doesn't seem that way. I can't imagine they're going to go back to the love thing with Caitlin. I really hope they don't. She has other things to offer their stories.
Yes, obviously. But I liked the conversation between the two of them a lot. And I like, I mean, it's one of the things that Caitlin's so good at that I love is bringing people into the fold.
Yeah.
And I like that she made the offer to him. And I like that, you know, Julian gives the initial impression, you know, because he's so standoffish. God, it's weird, but I like how he's, I guess every Team Flash just needs someone who's kind of the team jerk.
Sure.
And it seems that that will be Julian. You know, Julian brushes off the whole, you know, yeah, my conscience is clean. I know that I wasn't involved with any of the Savitar stuff. We learn soon that that is not the case. But
we learn that his conscience isn't as clear as he says.
Exactly. And we quickly learn, and I think it's actually a pretty smart move on Caitlin's point. She goes to Julian because he's kind of, does she say, the world's foremost expert on metahumans.
Yeah.
And she asks him to take away his power, her powers. And his response is, I don't take away metahumans' powers. I put them in jail.
Right. And I also like throughout, you know, the rest of the episode, I like that he contacts her and says, yeah, I was kind of a jerk. Sorry.
Right.
You know,
well, and I like that she acknowledges that she hurt him. You know, when he throws it right away, he's like, oh, am I here for another kidnapping?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, the snarkiness.
But it was a fun little moment between them, too. They both knew, you know, neither of them was completely fault-free. Because you've got two people who are being controlled by something outside of their powers, outside of their control, right? Which is a very cool thing. And I like that she's reaching out and bringing him in. I like that she did it without talking to the rest of the team first. Because later, when we get to that moment where he comes in and says to the rest of the team, I'm considering I'd like to join. And they go, wait, what?
Right.
I like that scene where Caitlin pulls them into the hallway of exposition and lays out, this is what I've done, and this is what I've done, and this is what I've done, and this is the right thing to do.
Right? Well, she hits the thing that I think the fans have been screaming at the television for a while now, which is, you can't do this alone.
Yes.
And you know, we need to be a team.
Of course, you know, where we are in the story at that point, that really helps Barry again. I'm hoping that we get past this keeping secrets phase of the Flash soon, because it still bugs me.
Well, honestly, I was glad at how much they resolved it just in one episode. I was like, okay, great. So this isn't going to be a secret we keep all season long.
Right. And keeping it from Joe.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just said we're keeping it from Joe.
Right, right. Okay, fair. But, you know, we've all seen many of our beloved sci-fi genre shows in which, you know, the hero has a huge secret that they keep entirely from the team for the whole season, and it drives us bonkers.
Right.
I'm glad to see that we're at least slightly moving away from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, so, yeah. I can't say it now without wanting to be, meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Justice League sound effect I don't have, or the Super Friends sound effect.
Right, and if we do not get to see the Star Labs hangar again this season, I'm going to be angry. I want to go back to there.
Well, and I have more about, I have a thing I want to talk about that later, but we'll get there. So,
great.
Keep going. After their discussions, Julian and Caitlin, what happens?
Well, there's some criminality happening in Central City. A jewel heist. And if only there were a couple speedsters there to stop it.
Right. And how convenient that Barry does this first one, right?
Right.
Without Wally.
Right.
And lets him get away when he realizes who it is.
Yes, it's our buddy Plunder.
Yep.
Which, again, is kind of interesting. This Plunder has some similarities to the comic book Plunder, but the comic book Plunder's history, it's very convoluted.
Well, and we don't even know what the history of this guy is.
This is true.
Like I said, it's a pretty weak villain for the episode, even though, and he'll be back. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him again, because, you know, his arrest has some kind of connection to do with what's going to happen in the future, right?
It does.
So we'll probably see him again. But the thing for me is just there was no backstory, and that is some really high-tech weaponry.
Right?
I mean, I'm glad at the end of the episode, Barry stole it so that Sisko could look over it.
Well, and I love that, you know, Cisco's reaction is like, that gun is awesome. I want that gun.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting, too. I mean, without giving too much away, in the comic books, Plunder is from a mirror universe. And, I mean, his gun isn't quite that awesome, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's, I feel like we are going to find out some more about that, hopefully.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
I hope so. I mean, you know, it seems like a big thread to dangle. And the fact that they actually acknowledged it.
Right.
Seems like a good sign that maybe they will deal with it in some way, shape, or form.
Sure. So what happens after Plunder gets away?
So yeah, Barry lets Plunder go after, you know, dealing with the awesome gun. And we get to see HR do his hilarious pirate voice.
Yeah. I like that he was the one that named him in San right? Francisco in this one.
Right? He's got an eye patch. We'll name him Plunder. and so, yes, Plunder has escaped. And now Barry is dealing with the fact that, ooh, maybe if I just let Plunder keep escaping, I can change the future.
Right.
Which is decidedly unheroic, but I get where it's coming from. I totally get where it's coming
from.
Well,
and then, you know, the next time that Plunder attacks, he's you know, I can't remember where he is. He's not at the museum this time. He's at some jewelry store or something.
I think so.
This was one of the scenes that I really thought was well directed and cool effects, like the whole tracking bullets thing and the gun that automatically tracks the Flash, you know.
Right.
That whole scene and sequence was really fun. And it was cool watching it as Barry was doing it. Like, it looked like Caitlin and Cisco were clearly just getting ready for the opening night thing of the museum. And Cisco was talking them through. I can't run fast. Run faster. What? He means phase. You know, that little exchange between them was really funny.
That's what it is. I can't shake them. Shake faster. Right. What?
That's what it was. Yeah, exactly. And I liked the way that worked. And I liked that then Wally came to the rescue.
And Barry was having none of that.
Yeah. And for a minute, I was getting really annoyed at Barry. I was like, okay, please, we cannot do this.
Oh. I think everybody was, because, you know, we've got a successful capture of Plunder, and not thrilled with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the way he started ripping into Wally, and even Joe was like, whatever your issue is, you need to get over it.
Right. Please get over it now.
Yep. Yep. That was pretty great.
And it led to probably my favorite moment in the episode, which is, Iris pulling Barry aside saying, what's going on?
Yep.
And Barry takes her to the time vault. I love her acknowledgement. Oh, I forgot this thing existed.
Exactly. Well, and every time we go in there, I go, is Gideon still there?
I gotta believe she isn't.
I do too, but then how is he looking at images from the future that are still changing? Like, so there's just a computer that does all the things Gideon did, but she's not running it.
Yeah. Right? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Maybe it's a new personality named Mario. I don't know.
I swear to God, I hope. It's a me, Mario.
Right? What do you want?
The Nintendo theme music is in the background. That would be the best.
Right?
So I don't know what's happening with that, but I will tell you this, that scene between Wally, between Barry and Iris in the time vault was one of the best things of the season.
Her breakdown just destroyed me.
It was really good.
My heart, my cold dead heart beat again.
Yeah, Candace Patton crushed that moment.
Oh. And where he admits to her that the timeline has changed, and he admits to her what he saw 4 months in the future.
Yep.
And yeah, it's pretty freaking heartbreaking to tell the person that you love that you've got 4 months.
And I loved that moment between them. It was really solidly acted and directed and written. It was a great plot twist, not twist, but reveal. And
right.
It led us into a nice place where, you know, the decision was, we can't do this by ourselves.
Right. And so we bring it back, you know, that great moment. Oh, Barry, that moment of, I'm going to protect you. Oh, Barry, please do so. Please do so.
Right.
Because we don't know. Well, we just don't know. Again, we've talked about this before. In the comic books, Iris does die. And Barry can't save her.
Well, and when she dies, she winds up going back to the 30th century or something.
Right. It's very confusing and convoluted.
Ridiculously convoluted, but it turns out she's from the future, way in the future, and was sent here as an infant and blah, blah, blah. So who knows what they're going to do. But, you know, they are doubling down on the whole let's play with the future thing for the rest of this season. So maybe. I don't know.
Right. So, you know, this
before we leave the time vault, I have to say, I thought it was fun when they started naming the days. When we started, Barry said it's 4 months. And then, when he and Sisko are doing the vibe thing in a couple scenes from now to look at the future, the date they picked was essentially the season finale date of the season.
Oh, what are the odds?
Right. It was almost exactly that. Like if you look at the calendar and you go, well, so, okay, we're going to have some breaks. So there's like 12 episodes left, but this could be dragged out. So yeah, it was, I think, you know, the whole wrap up thing could very well be the cliffhanger at the end of the season.
I think you're not wrong. And I love, you know, so they all get back together and HR lay, you know, they explain, Barry explains what's going on to everybody, makes a lovely apology to Barry that was, or to Wally that was well earned.
Yes.
And HR does the domino effect.
Right.
Which, you know, there's a part of it's like, I guess on Earth, whatever Earth that he is from, they've never explained the domino effect. We're all super familiar with it here, but okay, go ahead.
Right. It was a pretty simple explanation. I like that he had Barry set them up a couple times for him. That was cute.
It was fun.
One of my favorite moments of the episode was, now if we were to have a bunch of dominoes and Sisko goes, here, oh, it's very convenient. Okay.
Right.
Happens to have them right there. That's very convenient.
Of all the people in the cast, I would believe that Sisko has dominoes nearby. It just makes sense to me.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, they hit upon the idea of, we can try to change the future. We just have to be super careful about which domino we pull.
Right.
And that is where Sisko gets the idea to vibe them into the future.
What's he say?
Was it, get ready, McFly. I'm going to vibe you back to the future.
Yep, that's what it was.
So, yes, they come up with a schmancy device because schmancy devices.
Now, did we do the it was right in here, wasn't it, in the storyline where that we had to take a break because of the opening of the museum?
Oh my gosh, it was right about in this time. Yes, the quote unquote opening of the museum.
Yes, that was a little heartbreaking.
Right?
I was surprised that I actually was like, oh, now I feel bad for HR, man.
Right? We're starting to care about him. Yeah. Cue tumbleweeds. Nobody showed up.
Yes. Yeah.
And I did love the couple that did show up for a second. We're like, oh, I thought it was free. Half price, quarter price.
And then they're out.
Right.
Oh.
Free cappuccino. So good. So funny. And then they get their expectations up for a second as another person walks in, and it is Julian.
Yeah. And then we get into the stuff that I leapt ahead and talked about, but I really did like it.
Yeah. It's always funny when it's like, oh, so Caitlin made this offer with no previous planning from the original group.
Right.
So nobody knew that was coming.
Then leaping ahead, we're doing the vibe into the future.
Right.
This was one of my favorite moments.
Oh my gosh. Easily tied for me with the Barry Iris scene as the best part of the episode.
Yeah. It was really cool watching them get there, watching them read the headlines. And I have that list and we can go through that in a minute, you know.
Oh, we have to. We have to.
But then once we get past the headlines, we get to see again from their perspective, we get to watch Barry fail, right?
But something has changed already.
Exactly. Suddenly, HR, we think, somebody who looks like HR, wearing a hat.
He's wearing the hat.
Right, which is what made me go, okay, so it's probably HR because he's got the hat, but...
Who knows?
...is up on the roof with a rifle of some kind. We think it's a rifle, right?
There is a part of me that was like, I wonder if that's Plunder's rifle.
Oh, maybe. Oh, right. That would make sense since we've introduced that Cisco now has a new rifle to play with.
I'm just saying.
Could be. That didn't even occur to me. That's a good thought. But the question is, he does nothing with it.
Like nothing that we see, yeah.
Nothing that we see, but he does nothing to stop Iris from being killed.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. Unless, and this is a ridiculous theory that occurred to me at that moment, because I went, well, why is he there? He did nothing. Is there some chance that this Iris death in the future is a put on, that they set it up so that it looks like Iris is killed, but Savitar is actually killing someone else or something else, or they let Savitar kill her, but Harry is there with the magic, bring back to life rifle that he has to shoot her body with.
The resurrection bullet.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Is that a thing that's going to happen? Is the death that they saw this time not her real death?
Who knows?
I don't know either, but there's so many options. This is when I start loving the show, is when we can go, but what about, what if, maybe?
Right?
Fun.
Speaking about what about, what if, maybe, let's talk about those headlines, shall we?
Yes. So one of the first ones, Music Meister gets a six-figure book deal. So Music Meister, we know, is coming up for the musical episode.
Played by U of M's own Darren Criss.
Michigan coming back. So the Music Meister is a character that's been around, and he, of course, will make people sing.
In
because we know he's going to be the main guy in the upcoming musical episode crossover with Supergirl. So that all of the Glee alumni can get back together and sing, which people are going to have mixed opinions about. I think it'll be fun.
I wonder if there will be a little blue space monkey called Gleek.
Oh, man. Speaking of Super Friends. Yes.
Had to do it. So had to do it.
He gets a six-figure book deal, which is pretty funny because all we know at this point is that he exists. And we don't know, you know, if is that a good thing or a bad thing. One of the other headlines is, one of the next ones, Luigi's reopens after the murder.
First off, I super want pizza now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, to be fair, I go from zero to wanting pizza in like 5 seconds.
And we've now name-dropped both of the Mario Brother boys.
Right? So you're right.
I don't know what that's about, but...
Beep, 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 beep.
It's interesting that was dropped in there because that is as disconnected as anything from all of the other headlines. We have no idea what that means.
What my immediate suspicion is that it's going to mean that somebody we know or at least are vaguely interested in is going to die.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's interesting because our team didn't connect that to anything, of course, but Luigi's is a place we haven't seen yet. So we have to watch for when that appears, right?
Indeed.
But also, one of the next ones is Joe West honored at City Hall.
And
HR says, oh, good for you, Joe. Well, do we think it is? People are sometimes honored after they've been killed. And the headline right before this was Luigi's reopens after the murder.
I did not think of that.
Are we leaning toward, are we headed toward death in the family? And it's
my heart.
Joe West.
I have never wanted you to be wrong more in my life, Tony.
I know. So I don't know, but, you know, it's interesting because the headlines could be bad or good depending on, like, you know, Star Labs Museum closes was one of the headlines. But is that, does it close because it's going to become a Flash museum?
Is it going to close because of what happens in the final headline?
Which is City still,
City
recovering.
Still recovering from gorilla attack.
Right. So, you know, I don't know. But we know that the Gorilla City crossover was set up. But also, it says Plunder captured on trial for assault and battery and grand theft and something, right?
Right.
But the other one is Killer Frost is still on the loose.
Killer Frost, still on the loose. Yes. Now, obviously, we all assume it's Caitlin. Interestingly enough, in the comics, there have been three different Killer Frosts, so who knows?
Yeah.
But it's probably Caitlin.
It's probably. I would be surprised if they introduced another one.
Yep.
But
well, what I like about that is it gives them another reason that they have to change the future.
And I love that the minute the boys come back from their vibe, right? Iris says something like, I'm not the only reason we need to change the future now.
Yep.
And looks at Caitlin and they have a nice, you know, just a little quick moment, but everybody goes, yeah, so we have to change the future where Caitlin becomes Killer Frost and Iris gets killed. How do we do it? Here we go. Let's go. Right?
Yep.
And Cisco's answer, challenge accepted.
Oh, Cisco.
Right?
But obviously the headline I was the most excited about is the gorilla attack one.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Because I now, my gut tells me that the two-part Grodd episode, part one takes place on Earth 2, and part two takes place with Grodd and company just bringing the pain to Central City.
Boy, that's going to be a CGI extravaganza. So I am excited to see what they're going to do and how they pull it off, because you know that's going to be heavy on the budget. But the idea of a bunch of intelligent gorillas marauding through Central City is pretty awesome.
Oh, please. I ask for so little. Just let me see giant super intelligent monkeys destroying Central City. I'm sorry, apes. My mother's an anthropologist. She would hate me if I said that. Apes. They are apes, not monkeys.
Correct. Good work.
Thank you.
So, I think that's it for the vibe to the future, right?
Right. Well, it's what this episode was all about, which is setting up what is to come.
And that was one of the topics I had to talk about, Joe. What do you think of the focus shift? I mean, this episode really did, as well as the last episode of 2016, they sort of took us away from the Flashpoint thing and said, now we're doing this.
I'm torn. I like the idea of them having a big mystery to solve. That's very exciting to me. Mm-hmm. I admit I love putting Savitar in the backseat for a while, just because frankly I'm sick of speedster villains.
Yes.
But there's also like, I look at the stuff like, why did Savitar need alchemy? Why were they empowering people from Flashpoint? At this, like, it's, we have absolutely no clue as to why he was doing any of those things.
Right.
And I don't know. I am of two minds on it. I'm excited to see.
Back to that, don't you? I mean,
sorry?
I don't think they're going to leave those left dangling even by the end of the season. I think we'll understand what Savitar's motivations are, right? I hope.
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. But there's a part where it's like, yeah, I want / need answers to that, but I'm also super fine with not seeing much of Savitar for the rest of the season. That would also be fine by me.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I like that we're heading in a direction that's not Barry fighting another speedster all the time.
Right? You know.
Hold on.
Sorry.
Okay, sorry, keep going.
No, yeah, I love the idea of an arc that isn't Barry has to get faster, because we've been there.
Yeah. No, it's a fun direction, and when they started just laying out, okay, here's our new mission, challenge accepted, I liked it. I got excited for what's happening.
Yeah, me too. I think it's something new that we've long needed.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and then, you know, we see them change the first of the headlines.
Right. Yep, exactly. And then we do get to, you know, the idea that, okay, now we're back. We got to figure out Plunder escaped. So we know where he's going to go. He's
right.
Going to now break out, go to the museum, which incidentally, this museum where they were, the front of that museum, and this was not me. This was pointed out by somebody else. The front of that museum is the same museum that we saw in Barry's end of season one time travel run, when we saw all the different visions.
Oh!
It's the front of the Flash Museum from that.
Holy frijoles, I never caught that.
And so I have no idea if that means anything. But it was the Central City Museum, which in his, you know, Vision, it had the Flash statue out in front of it.
That's so interesting.
Who knows? You know, I mean, we've now got two museums being, you know, referenced in the episode. The Star Labs Museum, which we hear closes, and the Central City Museum, which we've seen before in a future version that as the Flash Museum. Do with that what you will.
My gosh. The layers. The layers.
But I did like the fight that they had there. I like that Wally, you know, and Barry went. I like that Barry showed confidence in Wally and that helped Wally. I also like that Wally got his butt kicked a little bit to start
a little
with.
Bit.
You know, he's got some training to do still.
Well, I loved seeing all the different things that rifle can do.
Yeah, what? Tracking bullets,
that thing's awesome.
Exploding cluster bomb things.
Right? I think just make the rifle a new member of Team Flash.
Well, it certainly tracked Barry on his own earlier in the episode when it was laying there on the ground and pivoted toward him. I was like, what?
Right? I would have loved that. Ooh, sorry, Julian. We really wanted you, but the rifle is just, it's more versatile. It brings more to the team.
That would be funny. Oh, rifle gets his own desk.
They ask it for advice.
Exactly. We could do that. Rifle, what do you think? Just kind of pivots toward a yes or a no. It's got a Ouija board spelling out answers.
It's probably got one of those little hologram things you hold in your hand like everyone else apparently has.
Just appears. Harry Wells again. Damn.
God, they're everywhere.
So they have this great fight, though, with Plunder. And like you said, the rifle, it does the cool, I don't even know what that was, like a net.
The electro net, yeah.
The electro net that they had to phase through. That was pretty great. This moment, I'm going to start laughing already. This moment in the episode gave me my favorite line of maybe this season. And it was, we're watching them chase Plunder on his motorcycle, and we cut to Star Labs, and Joe goes, they are running. I just went, what?
I did too. It's like, I'm sorry, has Joe never seen this before? For the last two years?
The Flash and the Kid Flash. I mean, it's not like it's Batman. Man, he's moving fast. This is all they do.
Right. They have one trick.
Hey, what are they going to do today, you guys? I think they're probably going to run. What are they going to do tomorrow? Probably more running.
See yesterday.
And Joe, they are running. I had to stop my iTunes and rewind it and watch it again, and I laughed for about 3 solid minutes. I can't.
What I would have given for Cisco to just totally side eye Joe at that point.
Oh man, that killed me. I don't know if anybody else thought that was as funny as I did.
Oh god, it's just I had the exact same thought. I was like, Joe, not only have they been doing this for 2 years, you've seen them go faster.
Right. I mean, they're chasing a guy on a motorcycle. They're not going that fast.
Right. Right. On a good day, some of us could do that. Not me.
Yeah. I mean, tops like 75, 80 right now. Right.
Right. It's like, relax.
Down a populated alley. They're not.
Right.
Oh, man, that killed me. Okay. Anyway, they catch him. They lock him up. And they're happy because they've changed the headline. And then we get a beautiful Star Labs opening.
Well, there's a moment that we skipped over that I have to bring up because it made me so happy.
Uh-oh.
Which is Wally gets all the credit and the crowd starts chanting, Kid Flash, Kid Flash, Kid
Yes,
Flash.
Yes, yes.
And just watching, Wally was so happy.
They worked well together, the two of them. I liked Barry's little speech to Wally. You know, Wally
she
says,
needs a hero?
Yes.
Yeah.
And before he took off running, Wally's eyes did the lightning flash.
They did.
Which was cool.
No, it was very heartwarming, and I loved the acknowledgement that it's like, well, I guess you just have to stick with Kid Flash now.
Right, yeah, yeah, I guess we've answered that.
Right.
Yeah, whether it's politically correct or not, that's who he's going, and he's right. Embraced it, so, okay. Then we do go to a successful Star Labs museum opening. Cisco right. has called a bunch of the school principals and offered cheap tickets, and they've got kids there. And I love that it's become a thing where actual scientists are going to talk to the kids.
Right. Well, and I'm sorry, but didn't your heart just melt a little bit when you realized that Cisco did fix the hologram?
And gave it a super cool up with science.
Right.
Kind of message. Yeah, it was pretty great.
My heart.
And then, you know, the I can't remember who it was, but they said, should we go talk to him? Let's go. And you see Team Flash headed out to talk with kids about science. And I love that. And so that's why when I hear the, you know, Star Labs Museum closes, I was like, oh, I think that's a good thing that it's there. Shoot. But
right?
We'll see. Maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe who knows?
Well, and maybe it is something like, you know, Star Labs Museum closes for President's Day.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's just a one day thing. We don't know.
Right. So that they can finally fix that big broken chunk that we keep seeing in the out exterior shot for three seasons.
Please.
Right. Why don't we fix that?
What if it turns out that's where everyone has been getting in?
Yeah, exactly. You guys, did you know there's a big hole in the ceiling?
Literally everyone who has been sneaking in has been getting in through that stupid hole. Like they get up there and there's a line of supervillains.
Gotta take a ticket number. Damn it. Anyway, so then two more things happen. We get a nice housewarming party.
That oh my gosh. I own a house that isn't as nice as their apartment.
Yeah, it's a pretty great place. And I liked the scene with the two of them before everyone got there. And I liked the scene when everyone was there.
Right.
I thought it was great.
The chemistry between those two. The chemistry.
And Julian shows up and the team voted and has accepted him in. So we're going to see him around a lot more, which is fun.
I love the acknowledgement that Julian really needs to work on his small talk.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just so brusque. Like, and even when he's trying not to be, it's just like, oh, Julian,
yeah.
The whole like interacting with other people is not your forte.
Right. No, really funny. They get a plant and they get a turtle.
They get a turtle.
And they get a picture of the two of them as kids.
Right.
Joe.
Which is only slightly creepy. But anyway, moving on.
But then we cut to the very last moment. A darkened alley. A portal opens up. Through it, a figure clad in black leather appears.
It's Darkseid. No.
That'd be different.
Different show entirely.
A young woman stands and opens her hand, palm beacon, flashlight, face thing. And we get to see HR. We know she's hunting him. We know, of course, because it's been advertised all over, this is going to be Gypsy.
Woo!
From the comics, he is another Justice League member for, a while. But it doesn't appear that she's that in this version of her. I guess we'll find out over the next few episodes.
We will indeed. And I believe she's signed up for a few episodes.
Oh, cool. I didn't check. That's great.
I could be wrong, but, you know, that's ridiculous. I can't be wrong.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Right?
So, Joe, the only other thing I have is I wonder how long we get to keep this secret from Joe.
Right?
How long
until
he figures it out or we have to tell him?
And damn you for putting it in my mind that maybe Joe is the one who dies.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying those two things. You know, the Luigi's Reopens After Murder was the headline that had connected to nothing.
I'm just saying now if he dies, it's your fault.
Well, all right. I accept your wrath. Joe, we got two feedbacks this week. Should we do
We
them?
Did.
Let's see.
Sorry, I have to open up my thingy.
Oh, well, I'm going to read Christie's while you do whatever you're doing.
You do it.
Christie says, there were two things that I really enjoyed about this episode. The first was the growing relationship between Barry and Wally. Seeing them work together, disagree, and eventually come to an understanding was really satisfying. The second thing was that scene in the time vault with Barry and Iris. The entire scene was stellar, but Iris asking when it was going to happen was gut-wrenching. I loved seeing her pull herself together and decide to fight back with Barry. I didn't quite catch how Barry is able to vibe with Sisko, but it was really cool that we got to see a different version of that future day. Maybe Sisko should vibe to the previous day so we can see how Iris got into that situation in the first place. Christy. Oh, that's a good idea, too.
Huh. Why did that not occur to us?
Yeah, that would be cool to see if they can do that. I don't know. Sisko's vibe powers are a little hand-wavy, unclear. So I don't know if they could do that, or but maybe he's gone searching for people before.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I don't know. Out.
But yeah, I agree. Boy, that moment where when she asked how long she had, you know, was really beautifully done, because it's not just like she didn't discover she was ill. She didn't discover how much time she had. She didn't discover what she discovered was she's got this amount of time before she's brutally murdered by a crazed supervillain. Like, that's a real specific thing.
Right. It's real heavy. Real
and
heavy.
Boy, watching her process through that, I just thought Candace Patton was fabulous in that scene.
Right. Ugh. Such good acting.
Yeah. Yeah, and then going, you know, Barry, although somebody on Facebook, when he said, I swear on the lives of both my parents, somebody on Facebook went, didn't he let them die? You know,
but,
right. Oh, stop it. Stop right. it. Cut it out.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Have you no heart? but yeah, I agree, Christy. Great feedback. Thank you.
We also got some feedback from Opal Drake.
Why don't I play that right now?
Why don't you?
Okay.
Sumptuous day, Flash Brethren. Here. It's great to be back from the mid-season hiatus with Bartholomew. Really? I guess he has to have a full given name, but I understand why he prefers Barry. So I asked myself to say a few words about this episode, and I'm kind of all about the random thoughts this time, so here we go. Holy crap, Barry, you are rich. I know I mentioned his sweet pad before, but damn, man. To paraphrase John Jacoby from Killjoys, I knew you were rich, Barry, but I didn't know you were rich. It's been pretty easy thinking about Barry as an everyman when he's been living with his dad or crashing on Sisko's couch. But that's going to be a lot harder if we keep seeing his incredible apartment. If he's not careful, he is totally going to shade into the millionaire superhero trope. Hey, that was an awesome rifle plunder. I want that rifle. I wonder where I could get that rifle. Hey, plunder, I wonder where you got that rifle. And Julian, what is that stuff on your desk? Like, I think that's a fishbowl with sand in it. And there's like a Hot Wheels van kind of buried halfway up to the doors in sand. I can't even tell where that other stuff is. I know this guy who could get you a sweet ceramic bowl or a kind of, I'm a kind of a big deal sign. Seriously, I don't think this is anything important, but I'm actually really kind of curious about Julian's weird fishbowl now that I've noticed it. Sisko. Super harsh this episode, or actually maybe plot was just making him be super harsh so he could deliver some life lessons to HR. See also Barry and Wally. People were being uncharacteristically mean this episode because plot, I guess. Get some pizza pockets, Sisko, and get back to normal. I'm with HR. I do not like Meansko. Meansko aside, fun episode. Great to be back. Since this was my episode to notice random stuff, I will give it 7.5 chin straps. Cheers, Opal Drake.
Chin straps. That Kid Flash costume is sweet, though.
It really is.
Chin straps. Great stuff, Opal Drake. Thank you. Yeah, I have to admit, I didn't even notice any of the stuff on Julian's desk. I'm going to have to go back and look now.
Right.
I want to see. He's got a bowl of sand with a Hot Wheels car buried halfway. What? I totally want to know what that is.
Right. What if he has a notebook that's just like ideas on how to bring back Savitar? Oh.
Hey, damn my alternative self. That's funny. I like that Opal Drake brings up the TV show Killjoys. That's another great show on the Sci-Fi Channel. If you like your science fiction a little grittier and a little more set in space, it's very fun. You should
I think we'd be hard pressed to find any sci-fi fans in the Central City Underground.
Yeah, there's probably not many here. But,
no.
We didn't even talk about HR's speech in the housewarming party, but I like that Opal Drake referenced it. Gather around, everybody. I asked myself to say a few words.
Well, and I loved that we got a call back to, you know what, I agree with Wally on this. The HR thing of needing to agree with people.
Yes. Yeah.
Support
aside. Support aside. Funny. Great feedback. Thanks, Christy. Thanks, Opal Drake. Yeah, really fun. What else, Joseph? Is that it for this week?
I think so.
I think so too. I want to take a second to remind everybody, join us on all of our social medias at The Flash GSM on Twitter, or you can follow me at Tony Caselli. Join us on Facebook at Central City Underground. And please go to goldenspiralmedia.com and check out the other fine podcasts that are there. There's some really fun stuff going on. And with some of the newer shows this season that have had podcasts added, there's genre stuff all over the place that's fun. So if you are interested in expanding your podcast oeuvre, that's the place to go. And next week, Joe, I think we're going to do the same feedback deadline. So that's going to be Wednesday at midnight Eastern Standard Time, and get your feedback in. We have an episode titled Dead or Alive coming next week, and I can't wait to see what that is.
And I'm wanted dead or alive.
Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. You guys rock. We will talk to you next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.